Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. This episode of Spaces Podcasts is supported by Twinmotion and by Section Cut from our friends at Monograph. You'll hear more about them later on in the episode. Hello, my name is Demetrius. This is Jason.
Morning, guys.
And you are listening to Spaces Podcasts Express. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Jason is on the road today, heading out to Elsinore, I believe.
Yeah, Canyon Lake. It's actually like, it's pretty cool if you've ever been there. But Canyon Lake, which is like inside of Lake Elsinore. I think Canyon Lake's actually its own city.
Huh.
Yeah.
So Jason, we have a guest with us today, checking in all the way from New Delhi, I believe, in India. She is the director of DesignAware, an architect. Please help me welcome Takbir Fatima. Takbir, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Demetrius. Hi, Jason. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm in Hyderabad, actually.
Oh, Hyderabad.
South of India.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me. I was reading somewhere on your bio, I think, that you were in New Delhi.
Hey, Demetrius, don't feel bad. I have no idea where either one of those are, so you're fine.
So thanks for joining us, Takbir. So I mentioned DesignAware. Can you tell us a little bit about DesignAware and what you're doing there?
Right. So as you mentioned earlier, I'm an architect. I have been educated. Well, I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and then I moved to India for my college education, because my parents are from here and I wanted to learn a little bit more about my background or my family background. And then I did my master's from the Architectural Association in London. And after that, I moved back to India because I really like it here. So that's when I started my independent practice, which is DesignAware. It's an experimental design and architecture studio, and we work across different scales and different disciplines. So we've been practicing, well, we're still a pretty young practice. It's been about 6 years that we've been active formally. We operate in India as well as in other countries as well, including the UK and the UAE. So we don't bound ourselves to any sort of geographical location or any kind of project typology. So we're kind of open to all kinds of projects which interest us.
When you say experimental, what do you mean by that?
Right. I think it's a really personal definition of what experimental would mean. For me personally, I think it's more about doing something that we haven't done before. So, you know, even as you get experienced, you kind of become well-versed and you know, you're kind of capable of doing things because you've done them before. But we are kind of in this space where we're always experimenting and always trying to do something new, which we haven't done before. So it's always, we're always in this learning stage. And we like to take up projects which we haven't done before. And that really excites us rather than doing similar things over and over again.
Yeah, you guys did, I think one of the projects, correct me if I'm wrong or if I misspeak, I think you did like a, not pop-up, but sort of a pop-up mosque with this kind of fabric wall that you created. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've always been, you know, looking for projects which help us serve the community and which are socially responsible. So we're open to doing projects which are, you know, which may not be paid, they may be, you know, pro bono, So we have a kind of quota for that. So this was one of those projects. And what was really great about it was that we had a little bit of freedom, even though there were a lot of constraints. The project was the design of a mosque for about 20 people in the garage of an apartment building, which was about 30 years old.
Wow.
And the reason for the mosque was for the elderly residents of the building who had been living there for a very long time, but they weren't able to walk to the mosque, especially during the month of Ramadan, which is, you know, really important to go to the mosque. And there are extra prayers in the nights. So that's when we were asked to design this mosque in these two garage spaces. So we decided to design something that was really minimalistic and really, like, really as simple as possible. But when we get a project of this sort, it's not, you know, we've been thinking about it for a very long time. We've been thinking about what kind of architecture and what kind of ornament should be employed in mosques. And I really believe strongly that there is a need for a revolution in the vocabulary of mosque design, because what we see usually, and even in the West, we see the same kind of typology with the same elements, with the minarets and the domes and arches and, you know, carvings and things like that. So, and calligraphy. So what we wanted to do was sort of turn away from all of the tradition. And this, we found this to be a good opportunity because the space was so limited. So we did something that was really subtle, and it allowed us to experiment with fabric, and we've been working with fabric and tailoring for a very long time. So we decided that this was a good opportunity for us to combine all of these different interests and principles into this one project. So we also involved upholsterers who helped us sort of stitch the fabric in place. So the main wall of the mosque, which is the mihrab, that's like the feature wall, which is an orientation device where we face so that we know where Mecca is. So we face that to pray. So that's the wall that is really important. And so mm-hmm. we decided to make that into this fabric wall. And then everything else was really sort of minimalistic and completely devoid of any sort of ornament. So we did this entire project in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Wow.
So you mentioned that you kind of turned away from the tradition, and this was for the elderly. How did that go over with the elderly group to turn away from tradition?
Yeah. They are really, you know, a lot of people, doesn't matter what age, but they have this idea of what a mosque should look like. And it's really hard to kind of digest something new, something that is not, that doesn't traditionally look like a mosque. So we were allowed the freedom to do whatever we wanted, and that was really great. And because there were a lot of constraints on site, I mean, there was no, it's an existing space. So it was more of interior design and interior architecture that was being, that was called for. So with that, we weren't really able to create any sort of ornament anyway, even if we wanted to. So mm-hmm. that was something that really helped us. And then when it was built, everyone was really in awe, and they were happy about the new way of reinterpreting prayer space.
Very cool.
Awesome.
And then the fractals workshop that you started as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So I started the fractals workshop back in 2012 when one of the schools of architecture invited me to teach a workshop here in India. So there were, you know, at that time, digital fabrication and computation and parametric design, all of these things were not really, you know, they hadn't really caught on yet. Now things are really different. But that was just the beginning, and I had just come back from London, and I wanted to introduce design research and computation and these concepts, also prototyping and these kind of things. And so that's when I came up with the idea for the fractals workshop, and it has evolved. So it's essentially a generative design workshop that also employs computation and algorithm-based design. So participants come up with their own analog algorithms, is what we call them. Because at the time, like I said, you know, computation wasn't something that was widespread and also not really easy to accept by colleges. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, everybody was really bound by tradition and by modern, you know, postmodernism and everything. So so when we introduced this, it was kind of a new thing and people were skeptical about it. So, and at the same time, there was very limited access to digital prototyping and fabrication equipment. So that's when the kind of the materiality developed from there, because we started to use disposable material at the time. So we used paper cups and plastic straws and these kind of things, which are really, you know, you're able to find them in bulk. And so you don't need to think about how are we going to fabricate something, but you're only focusing on, you have the material with you, which is really economical and it's ubiquitous and it's lightweight. And then you start to, the way that you assemble or aggregate the material, you focus on that rather than the fabrication part of it. So students and participants, they come together in a kind of collective effort where they generate or you know, prototypes and then form finding based on certain set of rules that they write themselves. And these are derived from fractals in nature and other natural systems.
Got it. I don't know if you're following along, Jason, but for those that may not be aware, can you sort of simplify what computational design and generative design is?
I'm glad you're saying that, Dee, because like I almost made a comment. I'm like, I hope you know what's going on because this is a whole different language for me. So I would love a little bit of a better understanding. That'd be great.
Right. So I think we tend to kind of use too much of jargon anyway. So I think what we mean by, it's a really vast topic, but what we mean by computational design when we're using it in the fractals workshop is kind of, it's not necessary that the computer is generating the design, but computation could be, you know, your mind computing something. So you're using mathematics and certain rules that you write yourself to generate the design. So the design is actually the way that we design generally, designers and architects and artists, we think of what the outcome should be. So we sort of pre-meditate or predetermine what we want to achieve. And then we try to reverse engineer and we try to achieve that outcome. But in this workshop, so that's a top-down method of working. In this workshop, it's more of a bottom-up method, just like in nature, because in nature, it's more about the connections between different units or different, you know, particles or neighbors that make up the whole. So there's no preconceived outcome in nature. It's more about the relationships between different objects that create a certain outcome. So it's a bottom-up kind of way of thinking, and that's what the workshop is all about. So we try to really coerce students, let's say, to not think about what the outcome is going to be. So a lot of students come to us, like come to me when during the workshop, and they're like, "I want to do a spiral, or I want to design something that looks like this." And I'm like, "You have to kind of hold yourself back as a designer. Obviously, you want to think of the outcome, but this is more like you're only writing rules, or you're writing the algorithm, which is just a set of rules, and the rules then determine what the outcome will look like." So you don't know, you begin with something, you know, you begin with a blank slate and you have no idea what it will look like. It might look really ugly. It might look amazing. But you'll only know once you do it. So once you start aggregating the material and you get there and then you get to know what the outcome is like. And so that's essentially what computation or generative design is all about, because you're generating something based on these rules, rather than thinking of a design and then trying to figure out how it's made.
Got it.
And of course, there's no right or wrong way of doing it. Both ways are equally valid. This is just the way that we've adopted for this workshop.
No, that's a good explanation. Totally get it.
Great.
Yeah, so these buildings end up being much more natural looking in...
Almost organic, I would imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick break to share a little bit more about our sponsors. What if you could visualize your building in a couple of clicks, remove months from the design process, or create a bridge between stakeholders to solve problems before they even come up? Our friends at Twinmotion offer simple, real-time visualization for architects. Their technology lets you view and edit your scene on the go in the same pixel-perfect quality as the final rendering. Twinmotion seamlessly integrates with other tools like SketchUp and Revit, transforming your BIM or CAD models into high-quality images, panoramas, VR videos, or presentations. Sound complicated? Well, what if I told you that Twinmotion enables anyone to present the biggest ideas in the easiest way possible, regardless of previous CG experience? To download your exclusive free trial, head to twinmotion.link/spaces. That's twinmotion.link/spaces. Section Cut by Monograph. Monograph is building a community of like-minded firm owners and operations leaders who are looking for solutions that align with their firm's values. On top of that, Monograph is building the only cloud-based practice operations software built exclusively for architects by architects. Monograph's easy-to-use and beautifully designed software allows you and your team to know, in near real time, whether you are on pace to deliver a project on budget. With Monograph, you and your team can plan project schedules, budgets, role assignments, and team members all in one place. The best part of Monograph? It doesn't require a degree in finance to use. To experience the difference today, sign up for a free trial at monograph.com. And to underscore their commitment, on August 12th, Monograph will be hosting their first ever virtual conference. It's called Section Cut. This one-day event brings firm owners, operations leaders, and project leaders together to learn from success stories and workshops, all with the goal of improving their business. Reserve a seat at Section Cut today by visiting sectioncut.com. When I was looking through your bio, you have like a ton of stuff going on. So you also have BuildAware and ARD. Can you talk briefly about those two?
Right. So ARD came up when we were participating in Dubai Design Week in 2018. And my associate in Dubai, Asna, she's really passionate about green architecture and sustainability, and also, you know, reviving traditional methods of construction and traditional methods of craft and design. So we designed something called the WeaveX, which is an installation, which is now placed at Dubai Design District. So we designed this using palm frond midribs. So the palm tree, obviously, is the date palm is indigenous to the UAE and to Dubai. So we wanted to take the local material and also learn a little bit about the craft from the local craftspersons. And surprisingly, you know, the houses that used to be built with this, it's wood essentially. So with this material, they used to use the palm frond midribs, and they used to use the leaves, and they built different parts of the house. And what's really surprising is that it was built by women. So the Bedouin or nomadic, you know, tribal women from the desert, they used to build. So they have the knowledge, you know, the expertise of building with this material. And now, because all the buildings are obviously steel and glass and concrete, now they've been reduced to just doing baskets and different kinds of, you know, crafts. So we learned from these Bedouin craftswomen, and then we wanted to apply it on a larger scale, but in a more mathematically challenging or geometric surface that we created using this material. So if you check it out, it's called the WeaveX. It's a hyperbolic paraboloid. And so that's when really the idea of ARD came up. And Asna came up with that, which is more about research as well as reviving sort of traditional methods and techniques. And BuildAware is something that we started last year, just before the lockdown, back in February. And it's crazy that we started it at that time, but it's thankfully it's still alive. So what we wanted to do with BuildAware was that we've always wanted to, you know, gain greater control over the execution process of our designs, because we do something that hasn't been done before, and then it's difficult to find the experts to sort of execute that or build that. And we always tap into different disciplines. So like I said earlier, sofa makers and upholsterers. And we've also got, you know, people who work with cane furniture and many other craftspersons that we've involved in execution. So we felt that instead of just doing design, we should also get into executing some of our designs rather than, you know, allowing another agency to do that. They may or may not understand it. It might be a little difficult for them. And we have a great team. So we've done execution before. So we sort of decided to either we do construction administration or we do the entire turnkey project. So that's where Build-A-Ware came up. And along with Build-A-Ware, we also in parallel started something called Studio to Site, which is an education initiative. So everything that we do in practice, we sort of try to do in education as well. So Studio to Site, now that we have, you know, live construction sites, we decided that we'll get students and young professionals who haven't had access to the construction site to, you know, bring them to the construction site and have them learn right, you know, by getting their hands dirty and learn right on site. And that's something that I felt really that I missed out on when I was a student.
I love that. I love that.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome. Good for you. Yeah, that's huge.
Right? I think that's something that's missing in education.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because even Demetrius and I were talking about that before. I mean, there's just, and I think what happens is you probably see a different level of excitement from the students when they actually get out to the site and they see how things are taking place. And so that's what really ends up catching fire amongst them and goes, okay, this is a field I really want to get into, right? Like this is like construction can be really neat and rewarding. Whereas like I said, what Demetrius and I were talking about the last, seems like couple episodes, there's just not that excitement about our industry like there once was in history, right? And I think what you're doing by bringing them out there, you know, having them get their hands dirty, or at least walking the sites and seeing what's possible and seeing it from development up to what can ultimately be a legacy piece in a lot of ways, you know, something that they created can really stoke that fire in these individuals to get more people into our industry. I think that's fantastic.
Yes, I completely agree. There's, you know, the excitement of actually seeing something built that can't be captured from a distance in the studio. And also there's this hesitation for architects and young designers to get on the site. They're really, they feel like that's not their domain, whereas it is. And that's something that I think that we need to change the narrative by making them more comfortable with the site.
Well, I think if they really want to get to the levels that they want to be at, ultimately, you better learn to get out there and do it because that's one of the pieces that you need to really be involved in. That's a major limitation.
Yeah, it's really important.
How can people follow along with you? What's the best way, website or social media?
So our website is designaware.org, and we're on social media with the same handle, designaware. Mainly, we share our kind of processes and everything on Instagram, also Facebook. So it's DesignAware and Fractals Workshop as well on Instagram. And my personal Instagram is Sagbir Fatima.
Great. Also a TEDx speaker. I didn't mention that, but you've done so much. But definitely check out designaware.org and your individual website, Takbir Fatima. TakbirFatima.com and DesignAware, pretty simple. Thank you so much, Takbir. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Jason, for joining me again. Thank you to the listeners for listening, and we will talk again next week.
Thank you, Demetrius. Thank you, Jason, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check out our sponsors. By checking them out and supporting them, you help us keep this show going. Thank you to Twin Motion for their support of this podcast episode. Don't forget to visit twinmotion.link/spaces today and try Twin Motion for free. Thank you to Monograph for their support of this podcast episode. To reserve a seat at their first ever interactive virtual conference, visit sectioncut.com today. Thanks again for listening. Spaces is part of the Gable Media Network. You can check out similar content at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com. If you enjoy our show, you can support us in three simple ways for free. You can leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or on your podcast app if it allows you to. Tell a friend and follow us on social media. Thanks for spending time with us. Talk soon.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, you know, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically, you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.